Access number 30651, Mr. Bill Rolston, Reel 5. Now, you weren't there that long with your first training unit, and then you go to it's 64th
yes.
Training Regiment, you think. Is it Training Regiment again?
Yeah, Training Regiment.
Now, and that's also at Oswestry.
Yes, yeah.
Now, what do you remember about this unit? How was it any different? I mean, what were your first impressions of it when you joined?
The discipline and was a lot stronger. We were told that I'm going to make men of you. You came in here as boys, and I'm going to make men of you. It was a small sergeant, I believe his name was Sergeant George. He must have been about 5'5", but his turnout was like a grenadier guardsman. He had a bombardier with him, and he said, "You're going to hate me at the end of this, your time here with me." And then we settled into the billet. And
now, was it any different from your other billet?
No, the layout of the room was exactly the same, except that the kit now had to be squared off, it had to be blanco'd, and it was, you know, it would then get thrown up in the air.
How would you prepare for a kit inspection? If you do, you know, how would you get your boots? What is blanco? Because people don't know that.
Blanco is like a khaki-coloured powdery substance, and in a block form, I suppose, and you wet it with a brush, a bit of cloth, and rubbed it all over your equipment, making sure you didn't get any on the brass, and the brass has had to be then cleaned inside and out, and everything had to be squared off with pieces of cardboard, anything, but it had to be square as in square. The beds had to be immaculately made, and everything, some mornings they would all be thrown all over the place because they were shambles. They were a disgrace to the British Army, we were a disgrace to our parents.
What about your boots? How did you get your boots as they wanted them?
Some people used to use the back of a toothbrush and keep rubbing down the wrinkles on the toes, and it was polish, put it on, rub it round in circles, spit, polish, then get a shine on it and then start again, and it'd be nothing unusual for a couple of hours. And Sergeant George started to knock us into shape, that we were all stopping. Instead of when he called halt, it was like a machine gun, all the boots crashing to the floor different times. But we now started, after a while, like to get it, so it was one big crack, that's all he wanted.
Were you starting to enjoy drill as you started to get good at it?
When you were improving, the poor sergeant, his voice was getting worse and worse, sort of thing, like, you know, getting more hoarse. And then after, I would think, about 2 weeks of this, we weren't seeing too much of the 25-pounders. We were pulling them round the square, and every night, if somebody had had them out, we'd all have to get on, they had to be run right round the gun and the limber, right round the square with them, and there was big, more like hangers, airplane hangers, they had to be put in there, and they were all up a slope. And if you didn't get them up the slope, if you stopped, it was round the square again until you did. So the thing was, after about 2 or 3 days, we were all having a chat, myself and the 7 guys who would go slow round the square. Let's go put all our energy into going round the square. Like, the energy had to come in the last 5 yards from getting up the slope, so you get up there. And we mastered that. And then he had us out one evening after tea, and he said, "You've been privileged to be selected as being the smartest British soldiers in the British National Service, like in the forces." He said, "And this is what you are going to be. "Not now, you're not, gentlemen," he said. "I can remember it was yesterday." And he said, "But when I've finished with you, you'll be the envy of the whole of this camp." And we hated it, because it was 9 o'clock at night, 10 o'clock at night, marching and rifle drill. And the drill, what you see on television where the Americans were doing with no one calling out instructions, this was drummed into us. And other NCOs were jealous of Sergeant George's squad, and they, if they got their fingers into us like at any time, they really hammered us. It was jealousy, that's all, and we knew it was. But
was there a lot of competition between squads? I mean, was that
yes, really? Yeah. The competition was built up not from the squads, but from the NCOs. There was a lot of competition from the NCOs, and Sergeant George was like a tin soldier. But with his turnout, he was immaculate. And something we done on one occasion, and somebody else got their fingers into us. He'd seen us lulloping about, he reckoned, and we weren't doing this, so he reported us all to go to the guard room at 8 o'clock, and he started then drilling us on the square. Whether there was words with him and Sergeant George after, we never knew, right, you know. But there was a big military thing going on at Western Command, and we were there, and on the programme, the smartest six-week soldiers in the British Army, like, but we hadn't done no gun drill or nothing, like, you know. And we were okay, but we made a mess up on the day. When he stood there, like, and there was no orders given, we were just drilling as like a clockwork. And he then took charge of us when the drill was over, what we'd shown off. And he didn't shout, he just told us quietly that you are going to drill now. It was on a Saturday till dark. He said, for making me look a fool. And he really hammered us. But we got on quite well with him. He was predominantly a drill sergeant. And then after that, we had a few weeks doing like the drilling with the guns.
Tell me about the 25-pounder gun drill. What do you remember of it?
Well, everybody wanted to be number one, because there was a competition, really, from the squad of eight of you, like, everybody wanted to be number one or number three. Number one was the guy in charge, and he had, when orders were given, like, all you had to do was repeat them. And
would he normally be the gun sergeant in a real gun?
Yes, yeah. The gunnery sergeant would do that. And the gunnery sergeant major wore a peak cap. Well, to us, rookies sort of thing, gunnery sergeant major, peak cap, he was an officer, and we kept saluting him. He used to hate this, and he'd give you a report to the guard room at 9 o'clock at night, sort of thing, right, you know, for not recognising an officer. An officer's got pips on here, and I've got this on me.
Tell me what the gun team did. So number one was the sergeant. What would he do then?
He would just, when orders were given, he would then relay them and repeat them, like, to the gun crew. And then I think it was number three was the guy who was laying the gun, like, you know, putting the elevation, traversing it.
Number two?
I think it was something to do with loading or something like that. It was two men, like, charged with loading, and then the others were people who were handled the ammunition and that type of thing.
Would you practice all those roles? What was gun drill like?
Very confusing, because if you made a mistake, they made you feel a fool. Like, they really slated you. Like, you know, you were an imbecile, like, if you made a mistake. And then they'd start your mistake has cost 10 people their lives who you're firing, like, you know, and they really sort of hammered that into you, like, a mistake was stupidity, and you're an imbecile, like, you know, should do this to you, should do that to you, like, but that they got it through to us, and then we had forced marches in there as well, right? Also took place in that.
What, long route marches?
Yeah.
What were they like?
To me, I loved them, because I'm a sort of person, when it gets really hard, I laugh. And a lot of guys used to hate it because I was laughing, but it was just a thing that I loved running, and everything I used to do, like, I was enjoying it. You'd have to carry a man, like, for 100 yards or whatever it was, a distance, like, on with a fireman's carry, and then you'd have to carry another guy on a stretcher, and this type of thing. And it was done, it had to be done in a time, and if you didn't do it, you would then have to go back again, like, you know, and if you'd done it in quick time, you could sit down on the grass or wherever it was being done, and you watch your mate doing it 3 or 4 times because he couldn't get the time. Things like that were quite common. And
did you practice limbering and unlimbering, the you know, dropping into action?
Yeah.
Tell me about that then. How did that all work?
They never had the quad light. That was the name for the vehicle that towed it. Didn't have that. We just used to drag it out of this aeroplane hangar type building and pull it around the square, and he'd give orders, like, you know, the gunnery sergeant, what you were going to do, and you just kept on doing it, and then he'd say, give you the order to pack up, and he'd run you the other end of the square, and you'd go into action mode again, and once you'd done that sort of thing, and especially if you got it wrong, it'd be back to the other side again, right, and keep on until you did get it right. They'd have you, instead of having, I think it was an hour for lunch, you get half hour for lunch, right, and you lot are thick, like we were told, that you'd be back again with it, like, and people used to get a bit fed up with it, but we knew we'd got to get it right, you know, and it was for our own benefit. And so then, if someone had done something wrong, you'd get your mate saying, yeah, for God's sake, like, think what you're doing of, like, you know, you'd get someone, the sergeant would be quite away, like, and they'd be, you know, so talking under their breath. But it was okay, the physical side then of the training, I excelled in that. And then I got picked to play for the regiment at soccer. I've represented the regiment in at boxing. There were a couple of boxing.
Now, what were the football matches like? I mean, was it from the recruits, or was it officers as well?
No, it was just recruits, mate, predominantly. Like, you know, we played against other training units. Like, there were some good soccer players there. Like, you know. Then I got picked to box for the regiment. I had a couple of fights there, and in them days, the referee used to sit outside the ring at a table, and if he stopped the fight, like, stopped boxing, he would command, and you had to go over and stand to attention to him, like, drop your hands beside you, and he would tell you what was wrong, right, and then it would be carry on boxing. Had a couple of fights there, and then I used to run, and I was enjoying the running. And so then got told, you're going in the Western Command Sports. Oh, that's great. So I said to the guy who was in our billet, I said, I know just how to win this. So he said, do you? I said, yes. Seen that ginger guy? I said, he's always training, always running round here. I said, we follow him, keep right up on his shoulder, I said, and then the last lap, half a lap, we go by him. Okay, He said, yeah. So then, yeah, we went up, I don't know where it was a stadium, right, you know, with all army personnel, quite a few people watching, and Ginger was there, he started off.
Is this cross country or?
No, this was round the track, 3 mile round the track. Well, I was second, and Ginger had lapped me after I'd done half a mile. And he was halfway lapping me again, and I thought, no way, like, we can't catch him. He might caught up to me, like, so I said, oh, I'm pulling out of there. I said, this. So I got round to where there wasn't any people, right? I stayed on, laid on the grass. I said, enough. And two people come over, medics. So, you know, they said, what's the matter? I said, what's the matter? I said, I'm second, I said, and he's nearly lapped me twice. So they said, don't you know who it is? I said, no, I don't know, and I don't bloody well want to know. They said, well, his name's Chataway. I said, who? He said, Chataway. He's the university's champion, like, and he runs for this, that, and the other. Anyhow, needless to say, dear Chris Chataway, he murdered a lot of us. I mean, it was everybody. It was only him running in the finish. But that was okay. I enjoyed that. And then they said to me, you've not let us down in the past. We're going to fancy a game of cricket. So I said, don't know too much about cricket. I said, not to that extent. So anyhow, they said, well, we're having a game. So, and there was all sort of second team county players there. Surrey players, Essex, you name it, they're there. Northants. So I got all dressed up in the whites. And they're out on the pitch. We were then going to field. And this guy says to me, go so-and-so. So I said, I don't know where it is. So he said, what do you mean? You don't know where the position is? I said, I know wicketkeeper, batter, bowler and long stop. He said, long stop? I said, yeah. I said, my best of my knowledge and cricket experience has played in the street. I said, I've played a few games, but I don't know what positions are. Anyhow, when it started, he said to me, you go there, and when we change the other end, you go there. And what they put me was square leg, where no one was going to hit the ball. And I got fed up, and I sat on the ground. Now, that was sacred to have done that. Nothing was happening with me. All I was doing was walking from one end to the other. And I was watching them, and other people, and I started doing what they were doing. Anyhow, the ball got hit to me, like, you know, and I dived through the air, and the ball stuck in my hand, like, luckily, and I fell on the floor with it. All these other guys, they went absolutely berserk, like, all jumped over them, ran and grabbed hold of me, and I said, it's still, that was a one-minute wonder, like, you know, and anyhow, I never got picked to go there again, like, you know. But the sport there was very good, and anyhow, when it was coming to the end of...
Now, anything else happened while you were there? Was so any other training? So PT is drill, 25-pounder gun drill and dropping into action.
Yeah,
and, not, you know, just in the square. Anything else?
Yeah, we went on rifle range.
Tell me, what about weapons training? How are you doing with that?
Yeah, we were learning how to take Bren gun to pieces, how to assemble it, how to clean it, what happens if it stopped firing, how to regulate the gas escape mechanism, how to load the magazines, like where you push the rounds into the magazine, how the sighting works, how to clean it, and then we done the same thing with...
Did you get to fire the Bren?
Eventually, yeah, but we fired the 303. We went on a range, fired that. I think we had 5 rounds of live ammunition, and they were in, like, they called them the butts or something, you know. We fired five rounds, and then we fired Sten gun.
Tell me about, hang on, tell me, what was it like firing the rifle and the Bren gun first? We'll come to
terrifying. The order we fired them in, we fired the 303 rifle first, then we fired the Sten gun, and when they showed us a film of a guy who didn't clean his rifle and he blew half of his head off, and we found that when we were getting on the range, everybody was holding the rifle as they were told, like snug into your shoulder and look along the sight, but then when they were pulling the trigger, they were all tipping their head to the left away from it, or to the right with left-handed people. And anyhow, we all experienced it, right? You know, it's bang, and it was a bit of a kick because half of them weren't holding it snug into the shoulder. And
were you a reasonable shot with a rifle?
Yeah, average. I would think just a bit above average. And then
what about the Bren gun?
We then had to go to the Bren gun, and it was, I think, it probably fired about 8 to 10 rounds, right? You know, fired it on single shot and then on automatic. And yeah, I quite enjoyed that, but I was a fool right to enjoy it, because if they took one, it was a blooming everything to be carrying around. And they had two of you, so one would carry the ammunition, and the other one had the Bren gun and some ammunition. And you would then change over, like, and the other guys just had the old 303 or a Sten gun, and that was the easy part of it.
And what about a Sten gun? What do you think of that?
When the ones what we had there, they had a metal butt, right? You know, just a couple of bits of iron and a little bit to fit in your shoulder. Didn't like it at all.
Why not?
It felt uncomfortable, and there was also the possibility of, if you put it down quite heavy on the butt, on this metal piece, it was known to bang, 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 it'd start firing itself, the spring or something. I later learnt that, you know, it wasn't strong enough, and it was a lot of people didn't like it for that purpose.
What about to fire? Was it accurate?
No. It had a tendency to go up and away, sort of thing, like this.
To the right or the left?
Yeah. Well, if you was firing it, like for me, I was right-handed, it would had a tendency to do this sort of thing.
To the right?
Yeah, to the right. It was okay.
What about other weapons? Bayonet?
No, we've done bayonet drill, like with the little pig sticker bayonet.
What was bayonet drill then?
It was a sack full of straw hanging up, and it was scream like, and guys used to be a bit embarrassed to scream and shout like, and this sort of thing, instead of a scream like what they wanted. We were all the same, like, a lot of us are very, very, I suppose, shy or embarrassed. I don't know what you would call it.
Was it just charging the sack, or did they teach you what they used to call bayonet fencing, you know, bringing the butt?
You do it with the butt as well, like, you know, it was in, out, and give it a wallet on the side of imaginary person's head, like.
But it wasn't sophisticated bayonet fighting.
No, nothing like you see now, sort of thing, like with more or less unarmed combat sort of fashion now. And
what about other weapons? Grenades?
We threw grenades, but I think we got the opportunity to throw one grenade, and that was about the lot, right? You know, I think they were 36 mils grenades or something.
The usual ones,
isn't it? Yeah. Later in life, in the unit I was in, and some of the units, they used to call them cavalry spars, because there was a lamp for everyone. They said it was all, they were all in little squares, like the grenade.
Any other weapons you were introduced to? Mortars at all?
When we got learned a bit about these guns, they took us to a place called Trosfynydd in Wales. There was a big artillery range here, and we had a go at firing them there. The 25 pounders.
Now, where was the range, Ross?
Trosfynydd, yeah, in North Wales.
Now, what do you remember about your first time firing a 25 pounder? Because it's
frightening. The way, the noise, and everything about it, right? Everyone was frightened, but then after we'd fired it a couple of times, we all wanted to go back there again and have another go at it, we never got the opportunity. We were detailed for the journey to Trosfynydd. We had army driver who was a qualified driver sort of thing, but there was eight of us or seven of us in the quad, the cabin part. One had to be stuck out the top, to see what was going on with a pair of goggles, and of course they all wanted that job. And it was okay.
You weren't learning to be a driver though, were you?
No, not at this stage. Then that all finished, and we were all getting units to be posted.
Now, how long were you at Oswestry then? You got there in June, a couple of weeks with the first unit, then, and so still in June probably the second lot.
Yeah.
And how long were you with them?
I think it was 12 weeks or in
3 months. So yeah, till about September.
Yeah, yeah. And
anything else happened while you were with them? Just to catch all,
No. They conned us one week, and they said, we want you to be blood donors. So we said, yeah. So they said, it's okay, you get afternoon off if you do a blood donor. Are you going to sign up for it? So yeah, we all signed up because we're going to get afternoon off. But the afternoon off was the day they used to reserve for your own recreation, physical recreation. So instead of having a game of basketball or netball or whatever guys wanted to do in the gym, you're sitting in your billet, because you'd been knackered. And there was a guy in the billet, and I can say his name because it's not the real man. His name was Bruce Woodcock, but it was nothing to do with Bruce Woodcock, the boxer, British champion, and he also came from Doncaster, the same town. And he was a guy about 6'2", 6'3", and he was 18 years of age. And he went in and he gave two pints of blood. He gave this by the time I'd done one. Well, before I'd done one. And he said, I'd only do the two. He said, I'll get two cups of tea, two cigarettes. They used to give you a cigarette then, but now you don't. They decry that, blood donors to smoke. And two lots of biscuits. He said, I want two afternoons off. So I said, you can have next first. And he was a real nice guy. And we got a weekend pass. And he said, I ain't going home, my parents are away or something, as a matter. So I brought him home with me. And his mum said, when I got home, he never said he was going to fetch someone home with him. I said, yeah, he's a nice guy. And my dad always had a bit of steak for his Saturday lunchtime. This guy ate the old man's steak, had his dinner and everything, and his own. Oh, he was a giant, but he was a nice guy. And I got on well with him. So